bringing us to this A Banner Week for Australian Journalism edition of Spin Cycle.
Very good.
Thank you, thank you. We do our best to fill in the great hole of quality that is left when Jess isn't with us, but we do our best. This is a show that...
I want to say quickly that, like, Jess's little show, like, quote, start thing, I laugh, but it's like, sort of a forced laugh. I mean, just I'm not going to, like, burst out fired. Laughing at that necessarily. That was like, oh, clever. I didn't force a laugh at it, did I?
No. I think there's a... I think that's what we're going for, isn't it? It's yeah. You just want to get a breath through the nose, a kind of a gentle acknowledgement that you've made a joke.
Yes.
Wow, we are off to a very focused start here. For those of you who haven't tuned in before and haven't turned off after that, Spin Cycle is a show where we try to unweave the knot of the 24-hour news cycle and provide therapy for the news-obsessed, broadcasting as ever from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, lands for which sovereignty has never been ceded. A huge thanks, as always, to Lauren for yet another brilliant breaking and entering. Wonderful, as always. As you will have noticed, we've got no Jess this week, so long-time listeners will know that that means a few things, one of which is you can expect at least one very audible technical issue at my end caused by me taking over on the panel. You know, text us in if you notice it when the time happens. Maybe you'll win a prize.
I've been saying lately, I love when I hear a technical stuff up on Triple R because it's just like, it's just a reminder that you're listening to community radio.
It's not fantasy.
These are regular volunteers putting radio out.
Yeah.
You know?
I will take that and use that as my safety blanket when I panic and press the wrong button, but thank you.
As long as you don't mute my microphone.
No. I mean, look, this is one of the times when I've actually gotten the right mic straight away because there's that little gap. Anyway. Well, again, listeners will have also noticed that I'm not by myself throughout this. I'm joined by the fabulous Rachel Withers. Rachel, I guess welcome again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So there was obviously one major media story this week, which will be kind of the focus of the episode, which is Senator Pauline Hanson addressing the National Press Club in Canberra.
Which you were there for.
I went
up to Canberra.
I wouldn't quite say I had a front row seat because I was way off at the back with the rest of the tourists and the newbies, but I was there and I did see what kind of went down. And I guess we're going to be talking a lot about kind of, yeah, what it was like in that room and kind of how we got to this point and why it was kind of a big deal that it happened and kind of how the press club tried to deal with her in this context.
And how she chose to deal with them.
Yes, absolutely. God,
can you imagine? We'll get into it.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Let's forward sizzle. There was some drama. If you didn't follow it, one, congratulations on making kind of better life decisions than we have. But also, yes, there was a fair bit of incident by the standards of these things. I also wanted to kick off with a quick, sort of acknowledgement and commiserations for the staff at Seven. Obviously, they've had some kind of major redundancies in recent weeks, and that's been, I guess, compounded by the news that dropped this week that they are going to be using a new AI tool to write online articles.
Sick.
Based on the broadcaster's TV scripts. And it's kind of, it seems like it's not an optional extra for employees. They are being told that they kind of have to use it. It's been called Clippy, which I don't like.
Oh, it sounds like it's the Microsoft Office paperclip. It's sort of like if it's just a matter of, you know, there are those pieces that are writing up what Carl Stefanovic said today. Like, it's a shame to be using that to publish actual journalism.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I want to take it back completely. I don't think Clippy should be allowed to do any of that. I think let the entry-level journalists have a crack at writing on board Carl Stefanovic said today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, it's kind of a crucial part of a newsroom experience. And I think, again, the more that we kind of cut off those avenues,
I started out doing here's what was on The Late Show last night in America. You know, like it is an important role. You add a bit of colour, you add a bit of flavour.
Yeah, and you learn to write to quick deadlines and trying to summarize the most important parts and writing for an audience. It's all huge stuff. The other kind of element of this is the kind of shuttering of regional news. There's a lot of reasons why that's very bad. It's terrible for the communities themselves. It's also terrible for emerging journalists, who often, that is the best way to learn how to be a reporter, is to have to be like one of the major sources of news for your entire kind of community. Anyway.
There's no entry-level jobs left.
Yes. So any journalism students who are listening, give up your dreams.
I was told that when I was a journalism student. Yeah, so 15 years ago.
Nothing
changes. Nothing changes.
But again, it's not an issue that's going to go away. The issue of AI in newsrooms, that's not going anywhere. So one to keep an eye on. But now, Rachel, you're going to enlighten me. As we've referenced, I drove myself mad going to our nation's capital this week, and I kind of have had real tunnel vision, and I have not really registered much else that's been happening. So tell me, what have I missed?
Oh, well, you missed a particularly Tim Wilson-esque Tim Wilson interview on the Today Show. What I have just done, because you have not caught this interview, I'm going to give you a little bit of an insight, but I've also sent you half a script where we're going to do a little bit of this show.
Oh, wow.
This was the Shadow Treasurer, Tim Wilson, going up against the Employment Minister, Labor's Amanda Rishworth, on Today over the changes to tax concessions for investors and businesses, really just for investors because it's about the sale of assets. But I'm going to be Tim.
Okay.
And you're going to be Amanda. You've only got Amanda Rishworth's half of the conversation.
I have. I want to be transparent with our listeners. I have no idea what's coming. This is a bit of improv.
And see, this is worth
I'm excited.
It. I'm out here in Cheltenham this morning, and you've got small businesses who are waking up at Sparrow's Fart to provide coffee and to connect with people. And the only answer that Amanda has is to shut up and get back in your place.
Well, Tim, that's not true at all. And maybe you should table your book because, of course, you've argued for these changes also.
Now, grow up, Amanda. That's not true.
Well, you're telling me to grow up. All right, good one. I'll take that advice.
Small businesses all around the country are screaming for help, and your answer to this is to turn around and to censor and silence them. Anyway, there's a bit of a stuff in between, but we're going to jump ahead. Amanda?
We will always look at ways we can support people, making sure that they can get that opportunity to get into their first home so they're not bidding against investors who are just able to go higher because they're backed with tax breaks. That's what fairness is about, Tim. You talked about it in your book. Pity you can't live it.
Well, I mean, Amanda needs to get a breathalyzer.
Jesus. Do you?
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Tim Wilson's been saying weird stuff for a little while now ever since he got back into Parliament, really. But this interview, just like next level unhinged. I mean, these like politician v politician things they do on both the Today Show and Sunrise generally are about who can scream the loudest. But Tim Wilson saying that his opponent needs to grow up and get a breathalyzer. How do you jump from that to you need a breathalyzer?
It's a big call, I will say. And I mean, again, I think it's the it's the times, isn't it? It's now. I think everyone is, and I think this will be something that we kind of get into later, is that the surge of One Nation in the polls has now taken on this sense of inevitability. Now everyone has to reconfigure, either in response to or to conform with what's happening there, either in opposition to it or to kind of adjust themselves to the new reality. And so I think Tim Wilson goes, well, people quite like it when people get snarky and personal. Maybe that's what I should do.
Yeah, but I mean, I've written at length about Tim Wilson and there is just nobody less equipped to deal with the current moment. Like, he's such an establishment politician. If One Nation voters are looking for someone outside of the system, someone who's willing to, like, you know, even though he was part of the system, I think Barnaby Joyce does an effective job of playing a battler and an outsider.
He sounds like he's talked to normal
people
in his life.
When he does the Sunrise bit, he's often up against Katie Gallagher or
Tanya Plibersek.
No, you're right. No, it's still that, and he just shouts. But Tim ain't it? And get a breathalyzer. I'm not sure that's going to cut through with the Hanson voters.
No. It's also one of those things where it's like, that doesn't really make sense. No one breathalyzes themselves. you don't get a breathalyzer.
Like, well, no, I mean, someone, he's saying she needs to get a breathalyzer.
Someone ought to breathalyze Amanda her. Would be at least a more cohesive take on that one. But maybe we're quibbling about the wrong parts of this.
But regardless, in the last 6-7 hours or so, the government has actually back down on its changes to the capital gains tax discount. And it's something that I think is going to unfold over the coming days. Mm. But they have caved to a pretty extreme media and business scare campaign, really.
Yeah, let's go through that a bit. I mean, so because I think, again, for people who don't watch this stuff religiously, it does kind of feel like these sorts of, this sense of crisis around the idea of the backflap and the backflip and the changes to these taxes is like, it gives the impression of being an organic kind of groundswell from the grassroots up. Talk me through why that isn't the case.
I mean, from the minute these tax changes were announced, and I think the budget did take a lot of people by surprise in terms of how far they went, but you have just heard this like visceral scream from wealthy older investors, people with, you know, multiple...
Not without an agenda in this debate.
People who are going to be paying more tax under changes to a discount on capital gains tax. In the case of what's happened this week, there was a two-day inquiry, which is what Tim Wilson was actually getting upset over, where it was a lot of business voices being like, you know, your classic, this is going to ruin innovation. This is going to damage productivity. Like every time anything is, any kind of basic standards are applied to business, we hear this.
Yeah. But presumably those voices are now mollified and very happy that the Labour government has backed down.
Yeah, you'd think, wouldn't they? No, they're not happy, not far enough, which I think to me just goes to show this was always just about we don't want to pay more tax. Essentially what we were hearing was like this is going to hurt the next Canva. Where is the next Canva going to come from? This is not actually about like you're like family corner shop.
No.
Like they're not making a massive capital gain. The capital gains tax is about when you sell a thing and you pay a massive tax if you've made a massive gain, because that's kind of how progressive taxation works.
So that's
works.
Why it's called that.
Yes.
So it's not just a clever name. Okay, thank you.
Yes, yeah. It's not about your day-to-day like business taxes. It is the capital gain you make when you sell the business at the end, which is why startup people are so particularly fired up about this one, because startups, low-cost
base. That's kind
base,
of the game, isn't it? That's
yeah.
It's the end.
Hopefully sell for lots and lots. Mm. So, but what's interesting is these changes are like exemptions for startups. We are suddenly going to have to define startup in a way we never have before, because it's not a defined term. The government is trying to set some parameters around who gets a little exemption. Also, small businesses also get more of an exemption out of these changes, and also some changes to trusts. They've backed down on some attempts to tax trusts properly. So, well done, Albanese government. I'm sure all the people who were complaining are going to be completely mollified now.
And I guess it's good news for the big publishers in this country that you can still get policy change via enough pressure.
Isn't it just...
Independent Melbourne Radio 3RRR.
Yes, well, here it comes. I mean, the only headline in town for the last 24 hours, including an excellent headline from one Charlie Lewis, has been Pauline Hanson's speech to the National Press Club, her first ever in 30 years in politics. Essentially brought on by the fact that she has been steadily, One Nation, I should say, has been steadily rising in the polls for all of this year.
Yeah.
Really. You could quibble with when exactly it kicked off, but having risen above the coalition a few months back and has, in the last 2 weeks, risen above Labour in the polls. One Nation is now the most popular party in the country. Although, bear in mind, we have a preferential system, so the primary vote doesn't actually say who
would form government
people,
necessarily.
But
it is a very significant shift
It's huge.
The and understanding so, of Australian
Charlie,
politics.
I have one question for you, as someone who was there in the room yesterday at this event. Your campaign seems to have the momentum of a runaway freight train. Why are you so popular?
Well, look, it's
that
a hard-hitting question.
That was the tone
and I won't,
of some of the questions
I won't duck
yesterday.
It. Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack with that. I think there was, I heard talk, and a few people I know heard talk, that there was a bit of a conscious nervousness about the National Press Club, about not wanting to give her an excuse to storm out, basically, given her very, very tempestuous relationship with the media over recent, over her whole career, but obviously it's peaked with journalists being expelled from events and The Guardian being banned from their events.
Which is just insane, because the Press Club sometimes is a place for a difficult grilling. Like, the Prime Minister and the Treasurer appear at the Press Club. Yeah. There's no, like, let's put on our kid gloves for them. You know, people are taking their shot to have a public question and a public answer. Mm-hmm. And I loved that in your piece that you mentioned this idea of, like, civility and, like, you know, being polite to her. Charlie, can I ask?
It's very articulate, but
you didn't get to ask a question.
No.
And we can go into what it actually looks like on the inside of the Press Club,
trying to get
a question up. But I'd like to know, because I know you were sort of, there were, Crikey put up some questions that you would have liked to ask.
Yes.
Had you actually gotten to step up to that microphone in that room, what's the question that you would have asked her?
Oh, there were a lot. I mean, again, it is, and part of the reason that I have a bit of a sympathy for the journalists going with whatever question that they went with is that you only get one. In this case, you only get one, because everyone. So the reason, I might as well get this out of the way. Mm. So they give preference to to National Press Club members for questions, which is understandable. I'm not a member.
I
don't generally get to go.
Yeah.
And so there's no great grand. Look, if you're not a member, you get put right at the back of the queue. Mm. But like my colleague Dani has gone a few times, and he's always gotten a question up. But you know, he has to wait his turn.
Is it you have to be a member, or your organization has to be a member?
I think you individually have to be a member.
Interesting.
Although I don't know that for sure. I know in my case,
friend of the show Esther Linda has also gone while working for the ABC and gotten a question up.
Interesting. Yeah.
Again, I don't think Esther would have been a member.
I suspect most. Yeah, and you're right. Maybe bigger publications actually have an organization-wide membership.
Each one gets a question.
Yeah. That's interesting. But in this case, and I think most times they would be able to accommodate non-members with the members. This time, from what I understand, they didn't get to the end of the list of members who wanted to ask questions. I mean, everyone wanted to put in a question. So that's kind of why I was not in the running to bring that up. And so we had, I'd workshopped about five different questions with my colleagues about, like, well, you know, if we get our one shot, what do we ask? I mean, there's some of the obvious ones, which I think could come across as gotchas, but I think are worthwhile asking, because if you're going to be a member of government, for example, that morning it had been resurfaced, as the news like to say, that Senator Malcolm Roberts, one of her longest colleagues, had sort of described America as a terrorist organization. And it's like, look, if you're a potential PM, what do you think of that, and how do you deal with it? Along similar lines, David Farley, the member for Farah, who won the by-election that was held there after Susan Ley retired, he at some point was put to him, do you think that the current immigration levels are too high, the 306,000. Mm. And he said, look, probably not, practically. And interestingly enough, Farley wasn't there. He was the only member of the elected One Nation team that was not present in that room, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I think he's going to really keep a wide berth on that one.
That'll be very interesting to see how all that plays out. So there was those sort of ones. But then also just broader ones, for example, you know, again, if you are going to become a potential member of a potential party of government, are you going to keep expelling journalists from your events? That did kind of come up, and she was basically like, yeah, if I don't like him, I will. I mean, it's oversimplifying but that was
she
basically
brought that up herself without being asked The Guardian's Sarah Martin asked a question. Now, people haven't caught either the full speech or the clips going around of what happened to Sarah Martin, who we did invite on the show, who said, look, Guardian's put out a statement, I'll let that stand for itself. Mm. But essentially Sarah Martin asked Pauline Hanson about the fact her daughter, who ran as a One Nation candidate the last election in Tasmania, is employed as a staff member of a New South Wales One Nation senator, and yet is, like, campaigning full time in Tasmania, and sort of like, should taxpayers be paying this 150k salary? Yeah,
and
for
did you have
daughter?
Anything to do with her getting the job?
And she, Pauline Hanson, essentially said, like, you're a trashy journalist.
Trashy journalist, you don't have any of the facts. Yeah.
You know, this is why you've written 15 negative stories. You know, this is why you're banned from all of my events. Didn't answer the question. Said, my daughter, Merritt.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't actually answer whether she had anything to do with her being hired.
The other side of that was, it is, again, it's any number of these things. We'll get into, actually, I think, the mechanisms of the day and how Hanson probably... probably played it quite well from her point of view, because yes, she says this, but it's like, and she said to the host Tom Connell, who I think did a good job, you know, I don't believe in nepotism. It's if you're good enough to get the job. And it's like, you've literally kind of said she's going to inherit the party from you when you retire. I mean, she hasn't said that explicitly. She's suggested that might be the case, but this is the thing, is that her speech went well over time. She spoke, and the questions themselves went well over time. Even failing to get everyone their question, they still went longer than they normally would. And I think Connell made a bit of a kind of specific point of saying, we took our lead from you, Senator Hanson, and we let the questions go longer than they normally would. We figured it'd be better to ask forgiveness than permission on that one.
That's good. If you've agreed to the format where you get a certain amount of time and journalists get a certain amount of time, extend both.
Yeah, but so there was a few things that she did. Again, there was the nerves about extending her, you know, the proper respect and the proper kind of taking her seriously. And so the questions were very much focused on policy. And I know that we do tend to kind of bag out the press gallery and stuff a lot on this show. But I do want to say that, like, as many lacunas as there were, as many kind of gaps there were in the questioning that you want, as many questions as you would have liked to have heard that didn't get asked, you know, it's not a capitulation necessarily, or a stupid thing to ask someone who's just topped a preferred prime minister poll how their idea of the world is actually going to work in practice. So I can understand why any individual journalist would have been like, no, it's very worthwhile asking her about how this is all going to work. Of course, it plays to her well, because she can, as she basically frequently did, she can give a broad kind of answer, say, but I haven't got the details and I'm not going to make policy on the run. We're going to work this all out by the time of the next election. And because everything was so stretched for time, and because so many people wanted to ask her a question, there was quite a strict, look, could everyone please just keep it to one question, respect your colleagues? And that meant that people couldn't say, wait a minute, what do you mean by that?
Totally.
Or isn't that an insane thing to say?
Or just back up your colleagues by using your question to follow up on the question that hasn't been answered. Like, what a waste, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, is that that's not, again, that's not unheard of. That happens at press conferences where people do think, actually, no, that's a worthwhile line of questioning. I'm not going to let them duck that when the question comes to them. So it can be done.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of that going on, though.
No.
I don't want to say what percentage, but, like, there was a few good questions. Sarah Martin was a standout, I'd say, and handled being attacked and you know, Pauline Hanson basically taking a leaf from the Trump playbook very clearly there. But, like, were there other journalists who you thought asked good questions?
Yeah,
use their
absolutely.
Time well?
John Paul Jank from NITV was one of the few people to actually pick her up on the numbers that she was using. This very oft-quoted $30 billion is spent on Indigenous affairs figure. He said, I'd like to kind of know where you got that from. And he also politely corrected her on her terminology and that she was using. And she was just like, oh, look, it's a commonly cited figure. I thought Mark Riley, actually, from Channel 7, asked a very good question. And he... So again, if our listeners didn't tune in, one of the many little incidents of the day was that about halfway through her speech, a banner sort of silently dropped behind her from the raftings, sort of criticizing her record on workers' rights. Essentially, I voted against pay rises, but I gave myself a...
Which Get Up, the activist group, has claimed
credit eventually
for.
Claimed credit for, and. So she kind of had to soldier on through that as people were, like, desperately trying to find out how it had happened and who had done it, and then trying to, like, tear it down behind her. So I think she would obviously have been very annoyed. Well, no, she wouldn't be annoyed about that. That's great for her. Like, it's great to be attacked at these things, really. I think the NPC would have been furious. No, they're investigating now how that was able to happen, and the AFP are looking
into
it.
It's pretty wild, actually.
It is, honestly.
Considering the security setup that you described in your page.
Yeah, yeah. So, to kind of fill in our listeners, there was the usual entrance point was fenced off with kind of temporary fencing, and it had two security guards on the door behind that. There was a lot of police around. So we were kind of like, we were sort of sent around the back to go in through the car park. And this was not someone running onto stage with a banner or gluing their hands to the banners or whatever.
Which is when I saw the headline at first, I thought I imagined.
That's what you would assume.
And then I saw it and I was like, oh.
There was machinery involved. There was rigging. There was a remote control somewhere in there that got this thing going. Honestly, one day it will come out exactly how that was pulled off, and I'm looking forward to finding it out.
Must have been an inside job.
Everyone I've spoken to has gone like, there must have been an inside job.
Because you got to get in there the night before.
Yeah, but it obviously couldn't have been done. It couldn't have been on the day. It was obviously too well. They were too confident it was going to work. So look, again, I don't want to speculate on that much publicly.
Anyway.
No one I saw had their fingerprints on it. I will say that.
Where were you last night, Charlie? I mean, the night before. Not a member, so it couldn't have gone.
Yeah, so I could have snuck in. I don't have the pass.
Maybe. No. I'm not gonna.
I love it when people say maybe with that tone of voice on the show while we broadcast live.
Well, I was just gonna say, there's a member of the press club who's recently had their membership revoked over some posts about the event. I'm gonna name them now because I'm gonna say in no way am I suggesting they're involved, but Greg Jericho, The Economist, who has, you know, been a member of the press club for many, many years, has worked at the Australian Institute for the last couple of years, but has remained a member throughout, posted something along the lines of like, you know,
you've shown yourselves to be abject and useless, something along those lines aimed at the press club. And
then within like half an hour, his membership was revoked.
Yeah, yeah. He kind of clarified that they just noticed that he wasn't really a journalist anymore.
Yes, but anyway, I'm definitely not suggesting Greg was involved. But it's very funny that he just lost his membership just after this happens. But you know, people with membership can enter the press club at most hours of the day, I think. I don't know. I'm not a member.
I did not see Greg there.
No, Greg Jericho.
Nor did I notice any telltale signs that he has been in the building. Yes. Anyway, but I think, God, that was a very long way of getting to the fact that Mark Reilly probably would have been pretty annoyed about that banner too, because it basically preempted his question, which was a very good, I think, very pointed question about her kind of record on workers' rights. And it...
maybe that's why they dropped it then.
Oh, but it was a bit before that. It was during the speech that it dropped.
I don't think they would
have known what questions were going to be asked.
Yeah, but it same theme as his question.
Yeah. Again, it's a worthwhile line of inquiry for someone who sets themselves up as a supporter of the Bathor and the working man to say, well, but you've made all of these statements about minimum wage
Mark
issues.
It was Mark Reilly who put the banner up. Sorry, it wasn't
again,
Mark Reilly.
Mark
Reilly either.
I'm very confident Mark Reilly had nothing to do with that. Yes, there was. I mean, I think. There was most of the individual questions were worthwhile, defensible questions about how the world would work under a Hanson prime ministership. Mm. It just left the thing that it left was, as we sort of talked about, there was this explicit demand for civility from Hanson herself. While she was on stage, she's like, I know that with this extra kind of focus and with this extra popularity, I'm going to be scrutinized more. And unlike our prime minister, I welcome that. But I will not be made into a punching bag. There will not be a pylon. That was the kind of thing that she said. So that meant that she could then very much set the terms of what she considered to be a pylon. And so as a result, all of the kind of, and again, no one was going for any question that could be construed as a gotcha. And no one was going to take her up on any of the many, many very offensive bullshit culture war stuff things that she brought up. So she talked about in a very
but
memorable
term. I think it is possible to point out the contradictions in what she's saying as a journalist without it turning into treating her as a punching bag and, you know, these things that journalists learned didn't really work with Trump. Like, there is, you know, like, as you say, Mark Reilly asking about her voting record on workers' rights. Like, the stuff is there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, again, Connell did a decent job of, he's got a, maybe it's a Sky News thing, because David Spears has this a little bit too, and obviously Spears is at ABC now, but he kind of made his name at Sky. The ability to ask quite pointed questions in a very conversational, casual way, he was quite good at that. The one that he kind of talked about was like, you've talked about this incredible commitment to free speech that you have. Are you gonna exercise that with your party branches? That are you gonna stop putting gag orders on them and NDAs and stuff like that? Which you could tell she was getting quite irritated by. Also, because good of the question. Kind of the way that it was set up, she would have to turn to answer him, but she always wanted to turn back to the lectern to like play to the cameras again. And if he'd followed up,
so you reckon she's really good with the cameras then?
Yeah. Look, the impression I got is that she is aware of her angles. That there's a certain statuesque quality about her in person, which you might not might not necessarily translate. But there was there seemed to me, from my vantage point, quite a lot of control and poise and about her in public.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, I guess you don't often hear journalists give an account of what being in the room was actually like to describe this sense that, yeah, she's playing to her angles. She seems to know how to perform on camera.
Yeah, yeah. And again, so I think it's, so I mean, I opened my piece with a little scene where she's taking to the stage and she's sitting and a kind of crescent of TV cameras kind of all sort of hone in on her like she's Ava Gardner or something. And there was just something very deliberate and still about the way that she would move her head in various ways. And again, I'm sure every single politician does it. Every politician is aware of how they're supposed to come across through the lens. But it struck me as something that I hadn't noticed. Again, like a lot
She can often sound sort of... she stumbles over her words.
Oh yeah, yeah. She's still not a particularly great public speaker.
No,
it was.
She knows
a tough listen.
Ultimately,
for a long
she knows that all that One Nation needs to be able to do is chop up the good bits, and that is exactly what they did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which anybody could have seen coming is like One Nation posted something online that was like, couldn't catch the whole hour and a half. Here's the best bits. Yeah, like, yeah, oh, yeah. Are they? Is it a fair representation of all the bits, is it? No, it's just bits where she sounds strong, which you take a look at my social media, for example, you will find all of the bits where she sounds like she's not making any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And also the Greens and David Pocock and a lot of places and that is, again, that's the nature of the game these days. That is obviously a big part of how people reach their audiences. It's not inherently sinister to do it.
I don't know that it's... helpful. I mean, I have been thinking a lot about the commentary around the Get Up banner and the way in which that actually wasn't an effective takedown, because sort of tying into this whole thing about not the media not bullying her on the National Press Club stage, but people have sort of perceived what Get Up did as like embarrassing her in front of the elite. Like, and the people who don't like the elite are not going to accept a Get Up banner at the press club as like evidence that she's not on their side. They're going to just be like, look at them, look at this club, you know, this, you know, the Canberra bubble bullying.
Yeah, for sure. This is the left.
I think there is something to be said for the clipping up, stuffing up, which is incredibly satisfying for us. And you know, you're getting really like, it's Trumpian. You write out an actual transcript of what she says, and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Certainly, in terms of the questioning, I think you know there was, but even the speech itself was more. It's a funny thing because obviously, like, it must work for her. She must know that it works for her because she's been a public figure for 30 years.
If she
wanted to get a speech coach to become a more kind of stirring orator, she could have done that.
I don't know that she can at this age, but I think she knows that the people she's trying to reach are not going to sit down and listen to an hour and a half presentation. In fact, as we were discussing before we came on air, like even a lot of people in our lives didn't really realize the Hanson, you know, wave that's happening until yesterday. A few people were like, oh, so Pauline Hanson, hey. And it's like, oh, yeah, we are way too invested in the political media cycle. I mean, we should be, and I'm sure all our listeners are too. That's why you're listening to this show. But like, a lot of people are just not going to pay close attention ever. They might be picking up just kind of the Hanson sounding strong and sounding like she's sticking up for, you know, the little guy that One Nation is packaging up and putting on social media. That's the concern, and that's why we all kind of have to make sure that we are talking to people in our lives about what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. Start local. Yeah. Start very local.
So in a way, look, I'm sort of like, I don't think inviting her to the press club and giving her sort of I'm on the fence. Like, I think that, as you wrote in your piece, like, no one laid a glove on her. It was not an accountability exercise, but perhaps at least putting her up there on the national stage has alerted a few more people to what is happening.
And
you know what? No one's watching it anyway. Sorry, Charlie.
I think more people. I think just anecdotally and sort of as you say, of course, yes, normal people who have work in the morning are not going. And who is it on the press club this week? Hanson. She's not done that before, has she? You know, like, when are they going to get? Yeah, like. But that's
hey, it runs at lunchtime. You can use your lunch break to watch it. But yes, look, I mean, if you haven't watched it, I'm not going to say go and watch it, but I am going to say go and read Charlie's piece on
Crikey,
which I think is still sitting at the top, should be. Something, no one laid a glove on it. What's the title, Charlie?
No one laid a glove on Hanson. It's not hard to understand why. So I guess part of what, just I guess to draw a line under the piece, and yes, I would be very grateful if anyone wanted to click on it and have a read, but I think it's sort of like a bit of a logical conclusion of this 30-year kind of dance that Hanson has had with Australia's mainstream media. They've never really known what to do with her. For the longest time, I think it's easy to forget now that probably for 20 of those 30 years, or 18 or whatever, like about half of them, she was largely a figure of ridicule. That was kind of how she was treated, or a figure of horror, or a curiosity. And then, I guess, in the lead up to her return to the Senate in 2016, suddenly she starts getting all these paid gigs, going on, you know, morning TV shows to talk about linking, you know, immigration to terrorism and things like that, which kind of just revives her as a political figure. But even when she was just an outrageous rent-a-quote in like 2007, when she's a bit of a nobody, but they're just like, oh, maybe she's got something horrible to say about South Africans. Oh, she does. Great, we can print that. Like, it still makes her a fixture, and it still solidifies her in public life. So yeah. So I mean, again, my kind of take on it is maybe not consciously, obviously, but like maybe there was a sense that this could last forever, this kind of dynamic where she's just good for content and she'll remain this like sturdy but kind of marginal figure who won't really cause too much damage because we can mock her out of that. Maybe that's not gonna be the case anymore.
Yeah, pretty wild that we're 2026, we're 10 years behind America in terms of the Trump phenomenon, and we've watched what they've been through. We've watched journalists try different things and fail, and like, in some ways some have learnt nothing, but in other ways we've kind of all learnt nothing, because yeah. Because what is the answer?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know what would have been the correct question to ask her had I had the chance. I do think good on Sarah Martin for having a bloody crack.
Yeah.
And putting a fact out there, even if she was only going to get viciously attacked for it. But yeah, what do you do?
3RRR FM.
We're coming now to the end of this episode. We're not going to get into Anthony Green popping off at
but
the AFR.
But if you want to see Anthony Green pop off at the AFR, which, it's on his
wouldn't?
Blog. Yeah. I think we can plug anthonygreen.com.au.
You'd assume so. Rachel, thank you so much, as always. We'll be back next week, hopefully with Jess back as well.
Yes, but well done to you for a mega week of both going to Canberra and hosting Spin Cycle.
They're huge responsibilities, and I don't take them for granted.